Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle from Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. In this episode of Word Magazine, I want to offer a review of a short clip that someone sent me. The clip is of a lecture that was given by Robert Gonzalez. Dr. Gonzalez is, I think, the president of the Reformed Baptist Theological Seminary, which is an online school, primarily online school that's based in California. The clip was apparently posted to YouTube on August the 24th of 2021, and it's a lecture in which Dr. Gonzalez is addressing, it sounds like bibliology or maybe hermeneutics, and in the clip he's talking about, in particular, chapter 1 and paragraph 8 of the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, and he's talking about the autographa and the apographa, the autographa meaning the original handwritten manuscript of Paul or Matthew or one of the gospel writers, and then by apographa, the copies, the faithful copies made from those originals. And the title of the clip, as posted to YouTube, is The Autographa and the Apographa, A Distinction, but Not a Dichotomy. And I was especially interested in this clip, and I'm sure my friend who sent it to me figured that I would be, in part because a couple of years ago, 2019, they had posted at the Reformed Baptist Theological Seminary site a lecture that had been made by Mark Ward, offering an evaluation or an assessment of confessional bibliology. And that was right about the time in 2019 when our movement was picking up some steam. We were about to have the Texan Canon Conference in Atlanta. And I thought it was interesting that they invited Mark Ward to critique our movement, given that Mark Ward, first of all, is not a confessional Reformed Baptist. I think he's a Calvinistic Baptist with an independent fundamental Baptist background. And then secondly, that Mark Ward's specialty has really been critiquing the King James Version and not really critiquing the confessional bibliology position, which is not arguing about the King James Version as a translation, but it's talking about the original Hebrew, the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Old Testament, and the received text of the Greek New Testament being the preferred original language text for the Bible. So I thought that was interesting. And so given that this was a clip of a lecture in which chapter 1, paragraph 8, which obviously we think is a very important part of the confession, with regard to bibliology, that it'd be interesting to see what was being said about this. So what I'd like to do is play the clip, and I'm going to try to let it largely play and not make a whole lot of comments on it, and then offer a few comments towards the end on the content of it. So let me pull up, if I can, the lecture here on YouTube. There we go. And you can see it was posted August 24th, 2021. The autographa and apographa of scripture, a distinction, but not a dichotomy. And so let's see if we can listen now to the lecture.
So the confession reads, the Old Testament Hebrew, the New Testament Greek, being immediately inspired by God and by his singular care and providence, kept pure in all ages, are therefore, that is, the Greek and Hebrew, they're authentic. So as in all controversies of religion, the church is finally to appeal to them. All right, let me make some observations about this. And this is really important to get. First of all, the confession here assumes a distinction between the original writings of the Old and New Testaments and the copies of those writings. The technical terms for this distinction are the autographa. How many of you heard of that term? Autographa, that refers to the originals. the actual parchment that Paul wrote on, the letter to the Galatians, or the vellum that Moses used to write Deuteronomy. So you have the autographa, the writings, then you have the apocrypha. Those are the copies. When the authors of the confession are speaking of the preservation of the Hebrew and Greek scriptures, they're not claiming that God actually preserved the Decalogue, okay, the actual stones on which the Ten Commandments were written, or the actual parchment of Paul's epistle to the Galatians. That's not their claim. What God preserved was not the original writings, but the copies of those writings, the apocrypha. And it is the apocrypha that the confession has primarily in view when it speaks of the preserved writings of the Hebrew and Greek Testament. So that's the first point, by way of clarification.
Okay, so again, his first point here is that the framers of the confession in chapter 1 and paragraph 8, when they talked about the scriptures being preserved, the scriptures that were immediately inspired in Hebrew and Greek, and then being preserved, that what it's not talking about is the autographa. So we don't have any of the manuscripts that came directly from the pen of Paul or the pen of Matthew. So none of those autographa, the original autographs, have been preserved. So that's, and they weren't preserved at the time that the framers of the confession were exercising their ministry. So that's his first point.
Secondly, the confession asserts, okay, here I am, got the slides up here. It assumes or asserts a continuity between the originals and the copies. In other words, they don't make the distinction into a dichotomy. They don't say, well, the original writings are inspired by God, whereas the copies that were made of those writings are not inspired by God. What they actually say is that God has providentially preserved the inspired writings of Moses, Isaiah, and Paul through history. And the texts that they describe as authentic in the confession are actually the apocrypha.
All right. So, second point is, although there is a distinction, as he puts it, between the autographa, which are now lost, and the apocrypha, the copies, there is a distinction, but not a dichotomy. And when they talk about the scriptures being authentic, they're referring to the extant apocrypha, to the extant copies that they had in their own day. One interesting thing, by the way, that I recently came across is in most of the modern printings of the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, it uses the word authentic there, but in the Westminster Confession of Faith, it's the word authentical. And I look back in one of the earlier, at least in earlier 20th century printings of the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, the one done by the historian Lumpkin in his collection of Baptist confessions, and he has the word authentical there, same as in the Westminster Confession of Faith in chapter 1, paragraph 8. And I don't know why, for some reason, in most of the modern printings, have gone to the more modern word authentic. So in chapter 1, paragraph 8, it begins, the Old Testament in Hebrew, which was the native language of the people of God of old, and the New Testament in Greek, which at the time of the writing of it was most generally known to the nations, being immediately inspired by God and by his singular care and providence kept pure in all ages, are therefore authentic or authentical. So, as in all controversies of religion, the church is finally to appeal to them. So Dr. Gonzalez is making the point that when it talks about the scriptures being authentical, that it's making reference to the apocrypha and not merely to the original autographa, which had not been preserved. And that's a very important point to make. So that those are his first two points, and let's listen to the third.
Copies. Okay. So when they say the authentic text, they're not just talking about the actual parchment that Paul wrote on, they're talking about the copies of Paul's writings. Now, this raises a question. Is the confession teaching that the Apocrypha, the copies, are just as inspired as the Autographa, the originals? And actually, I don't think we can give a simple yes or no answer to that question. Okay. In a sense, the answer depends on whether our focus is on the process by which God brings writings into existence, or whether our focus is on the product or quality of the writings themselves. Let me explain.
It's an interesting question he raises here. When we talk about the word being preserved and we talk about the autograph being immediately inspired, are we talking about the Apocrypha being inspired? And again, he's going to say, well, it depends on whether or not we're talking about the final product, or are we talking about the process? Actually, it begins with, are we talking about the process, or are we talking about the final product? So let's listen as he explains this distinction between these two things.
Explain. First of all, God only inspired the original writings. Okay, and now I'm focusing on the process. I'm focusing on what God did for the prophets and apostles, as opposed to what God did for the scribes who copied the writings of the prophets and the apostles.
So the prophets and the apostles wrote that which was immediately inspired, but the scribes are not the same as the apostles and prophets. And so they are not writing something that is inspired, he's saying.
And I think that's the distinction that the Puritans would have made. They would have described God's superintendence of Moses, Isaiah, and Paul as divine inspiration. But God's superintendence of the scribes who copied the scripture writers, that's divine preservation. And yet, and see, here's the important point to get. The copies possess the quality of inspiration.
Yes, if only the autographa were immediately inspired and they're now lost, then that would mean we would have no inspired scriptures. But we affirm the inspiration of the scriptures, and so yes, we affirm that though the autographa are lost, the apographa or the copies that we do have do reflect the quality of inspiration, because if they are faithful copies of what was immediately inspired, then they are conveying the immediately inspired text. And that is what God has faithfully preserved. So I'm in general agreement with what he's saying here.
And here we're focusing upon the writings themselves, the product, so to speak. And here the Puritans are stressing continuity. They're applying the quality of inspiration of the copies of the originals, because, as they put it, God has kept pure the original writings by his singular care and providence. And if the very words of the inspired originals have been preserved in the copies, so has the quality of inspiration. Thus, when the...
Again, I agree. There is continuity between the autographa and the received apographa. I would agree with that.
Confession describes the Hebrew and Greek scriptures as the only inspired, authoritative, infallible rule for faith and life. It does not reserve those qualities for the originals, which we don't have, but it applies those qualities to the copies, which we do have. Okay? And that leads to a third observation, which I think is the main point. The confession affirms that God has taken special care to preserve the integrity of the autographa, that is the originals, in the apographa, that is the copies.
All right, that brings the lecture to a close. It would have been interesting to hear what he had to say after this. Just as a general observation, I find myself largely in agreement with what Dr. Gonzalez has said up to this point. And I think it's encouraging, actually, because it seemed like in 2019, with him asking Dr. Ward to critique the confessional bibliology position that maybe he was taking, an adversarial approach toward the confessional text. But here it seems like maybe, I don't know if we've influenced him or if these were views he had before, but it seems like he's reflecting something of what we've been saying, that there's continuity in the mind of the framers of the confession between the autographa and the extant apographa. Now, the big question is, where does he go from here? If the point, if he goes from here to say that the inspired scriptures are there in the mass of the extant apographa, and now we have to use the modern historical critical method, modern textual criticism, to reconstruct some hypothetical approximation of it, then we would part ways and say, no, we don't think that's right. But if his point is to say that there's continuity between the autographa and in the extant apographa that the framers, the reformers and the Orthodox men, Orthodox Protestant men had at the time of the writing of the confession, and they affirmed this text, which was the received text, as the proper text of scripture, then we would be in agreement. And again, it is actually the those who say that we must reconstruct the text from the extant apographa, or who say it's somewhere in the mass of those documents. We don't know what it is, but we have to apply scientific method to attempt to reconstruct it. It is those persons who are presenting really a novel idea. And it's not the viewpoint that the framers of the confession had. And just to reinforce that, let me just share a couple of sources. One would be to look at Richard A. Muller's Post-Reformation Reformed Dogmatics, Volume 2 on Holy Scripture. I recently tweeted out a few quotes from this text on page 433. Dr. Muller says, "By original and authentic text, the Protestant Orthodox do not mean the autographa, which no one can possess, but the apographa in the original tongue, which are the source of all versions." So Muller's saying the framers, when they said that that the immediately inspired text was authentical, they weren't talking about the autographa, but they were talking about the copies, the faithful copies that they had. He goes on to say, "It is important to note that the Reformed Orthodox insistence on the identification of the Hebrew and Greek texts as alone authentic does not demand direct reference to autographa in those languages. The original and authentic text of Scripture means, beyond the autograph copies, the legitimate tradition of Hebrew and Greek apographa." That's it. They believed that they didn't have to reconstruct the autograph that was lost, but it was there in the legitimate tradition of the Hebrew and Greek apographa. And then he Muller says, this is still on page 433, "The case for scripture as an infallible rule of faith and practice, and the separate arguments for a received text free from major, that is, non-scribal errors, rests on an examination of apographa and does not seek the infinite regress to the lost autographa as a prop for textual infallibility." And there Muller is taking a direct shot at the 19th century Warfieldian effort to reconstruct the autograph, or to say, "I believe in the inerrancy of scriptures, but they're inerrant in the autographs. We just don't have those." The same sort of ideas that Warfield put forward that were later articulated in the Chicago Statement on Biblical Inerrancy. This is a modern evangelical innovation, not the view of the Westminster Divines or the framers of the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith. They were not seeking through some scientific method what Muller calls an infinite regress to the lost autographa. And then in a footnote, Muller makes this even clearer. This is footnote 165. He says, a rather sharp contrast must be drawn, therefore, between the Protestant Orthodox arguments concerning the autographa and the views of Archibald Alexander Hodge and Benjamin Breckinridge Warfield. He says there's a sharp contrast between what the framers thought of as what was the authentic text, that is the faithful or legitimate tradition of the received text, versus the Warfieldian and Hodge 19th century attempt to say just the lost autographs are inerrant, and we're attempting to reconstruct them using a modern scientific method. In that same footnote, Muller adds, the point made by Hodge and Warfield is a logical trap, a rhetorical flourish, a conundrum designed to confound the critics. See, there were people who were criticizing evangelicals and conservative Reformed Christians, saying, you know, we see scribal errors in the text. And they thought that the great defense was to say, well, we don't think that the copies are without error. We think the original autograph is. No, we don't have them. We can't show them to you. We're trying to reconstruct them. And Muller is saying that that's a completely different approach than was the approach that was taken by the framers of the confession. He says Hodge and Warfield were giving a logical trap, a rhetorical flourish, a conundrum designed to confound the critics, who can only prove their case for genuine errancy by recourse to a text they do not and surely cannot have. So Muller makes a great point there. Along these same lines, and I gave an entire Word magazine to this, I would commend again the article by Richard F. Brash that appeared in the Westminster Theological Journal in 2019. The journal article is titled Ad Fontes, the Concept of the Originals of Scripture in 17th Century Reformed Orthodoxy. And if you look on my Word Magazine archive, I gave the entirety of Word Magazine 128 to covering Brash's article. But let me just read the first two paragraphs, the opening two paragraphs in Brash's article. He says, this is on page 123 of his Westminster Theological Journal article from volume 81, 2019. He says, present day evangelical discussion of the originals of Scripture typically focus on the autographa, but it is increasingly recognized that in 17th century Reformed Orthodox theology, reference to the originals of Scripture meant something more than just the autographa. This article substantiates the claim that while some of the Reformed Orthodox made the conceptual distinction between the autographa and the apographa, they typically posited a practical univocity between the two. This univocity and the doctrine of the providential preservation of Scripture that underlay it came under increasing pressure during the 17th century, and so it underwent some refinement. But ultimately, most Reformed Orthodox of this period maintained the belief that Scripture had been preserved in the extant copies, which were, as far as they were concerned, original. This belief distinguished their position from Rome's and also made them much less willing than their successors to allow conjectural emendation of the biblical text. That's the end of his first two paragraphs. So again, really important point being made here for understanding the confession and understanding its bibliology versus the modern bibliology that's being promoted in the academy and even being embraced by some evangelicals today. And I think, as Dr. Gonzalez says, yes, there's a distinction between the autograph and the apographs, but that distinction is not a dichotomy, and there is continuity. Richard Brash goes so far as to say that when the reformers and the framers of the Reformed Protestant confessions talked about the autographa and the faithful apographa, that they saw a practical univocity between them, that they're the same thing. If you were to ask them, show me the autograph, they would say, well, those have been lost, but they're right here in the faithful copies, the legitimate tradition of the received text. Now, again, I'm not sure what Robert Gonzalez's view is on that. Unfortunately, the clip stopped. But as far as what he teaches here, I think he's on the right track and he's on target. It's just a matter of what you do with it from this point. Do you say, okay, we're gonna accept the received text, same as the Protestant Orthodox, or are you gonna go into novelty and accept the Hodge-Werfieldian 19th century appeal to reconstructing lost autographa? Obviously, I think the old way would be better if we would just take the view of the framers of the confession, whether the Westminster Confession of Faith or the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, and affirm the text that is in the legitimate tradition of the received text. And we can say, when we have those faithful copies that came into printed form, that we have the autograph. We don't have to reconstruct the autograph. We have the autograph as it has been providentially preserved, kept pure in all ages by the Lord. Well, I hope that this episode of Word Magazine has been helpful to those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.